Well, the Plathos Mega is here again for Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. And we are reading the Acts of the Apostles. And we're about to get to that lesson that no layperson wants to read, assuming you have a layperson reading, because it has all these place names in it in Acts 2. I think we got through verse 6. So we're in the middle of the reaction of the crowd to the sound of the as of a violent being carried along wind and so forth, and then the 120, apparently all of them, not just the apostles, are speaking with other human languages that they apparently haven't studied through a Rosetta Stone or one of these things, you know. So anyway, verse 7. Yes. So, existanta de kai ethaumazon legantes. Uk idu hapantes hutoi eisen hoi laluntes galileoi. And the expected answer with uk there, you can see, is yes. So, existanta is from existemi, and it's an imperfect middle. Could be passive in form, of course, third person plural. They were standing outside themselves, and it has an intransitive force. They were astonished, right? And you might even give it, although with histemi and its forms, I'm not quite sure how much to give to it. They kept on, or they began to be astonished, and they were marveling, another imperfect from thaumazo, right? As they said, saying, right? Kind of an unnecessary participle. Look, idu. Hapantes is just a variant form of pantes, you know? Just you have pas and you have hapas, right? So if you went with word order, it would be all these are the Galileans who are speaking. Right, it would be easy enough, just if you don't try to make sense of the clause, to take laluntes as a attributive position participle, right, in so-called sandwich position between hoi and galileoi. But that doesn't make a lot of sense. All these are the Galileans who are speaking, aren't they? And the way it's normally taken is, and of course, word order being as flexible as it is, in a sense, you put the asin on the other side of the laluntes, and then it becomes a substantized participle. And all these who are speaking are Galileans, aren't they? Right? And there must be something about the Galilean accent, because, you know, although it's ironic, in at least one or two of the Gospels, the slave girl, you know, recognizes Peter's Galilean accent. So whether it's the equivalent of Jus Gais, you know, or something, or maybe broadly understood a southern accent, you know, in the U.S., there must be something about how Galileans at least typically talk. And so we just get into it. So if that's the case, and it is expected by Uke, then they ask a follow-up question. And that's verse 7. Thoughts or comments or Mark?
I know that you mentioned that ex istanto is middle, so they're standing outside themselves. If it were active, would it have the same idiomatic force as in English as if they were standing out, they were noticeable?
Right. Actually, I think that if it were active, I'd have to look it up, but I'm pretty sure it would actually be a transitive force verb. Remember that histemi, you know, has all these conditions under which it's transitive, intransitive. I think that if this were the imperfect indicative active, it would actually be to astonish someone, you know, as opposed to be astonished. Yeah. So in that sense, I don't think there's any real middle force to it. It's just this strain. And really, the histemi and its compounds are so common in the New Testament that, you know, I don't mind advertising, as I like to call it, not so fundamental Greek grammar, And Dr. Vells, in chapter 35, he would know the page number, of course. He actually has collected and summarized, you know, the when histemi means has a transitive meaning, when it has an intransitive meaning, and those, because it's really quite complex. It's in the lexicon, but you have to ferret it out, you know. And I think part of the, I think there must be a unified lexicon writer contract, and one of the things they agree to do is to make sure that there is no atmosphere in the book and the information is as difficult to find as possible. So at least in the new BDAG, you know, they have the Bible verses in bold. I mean, that was like the beginning of the new creation when they did that. Now you can actually find, if it does refer to a particular verse, you can actually find it now, you know. It's kind of like the difference between using holiday and BDB. You know, I mean, real men use BDB. I'll just say it that way, and then we'll move on. I mean, until you've paid the dues of spending 20 minutes trying to find what the heck triliteral root this word is from, I mean, you haven't earned your spurs, for crying out loud. So, okay, fine, verse 8. Kai pose meis akuamen hekastas te edia dialecto hemon en he egenethemen. Yeah, and then all those, well, we'll just get them all in. It'll be fun. Parthoi kai medoi kai elamitai kai hoi kat oi kuntes tein mesopotamian yudaion, doesn't make any sense, te kai kapadokian pontan kai tein azian phrygian te kai pamphylian aegypton kai tamere tes libies tes kata kyrene kai hoi epidemuntas romaioi Udiote kai proselitoi, Cretes kai arabes, Acuomen la lunton auton, Tais hemeterais glossais ta megalea tu theu. Right? Mostly place names. So, verse 8, and how, post means how, it's asking a question. How emphatic are we hearing, parenthesis, each one, nominative, so it's you know, it's kind of an awkward shift to the singular, but we know what that means. How are we, each one, hearing by means of or in our own language, our own dialect, in which we were genaod, in which we were born, the mother tongue, so to speak. And then we have the list, nominative. So these are all the subject of the akouamen that occurs in verse 11. We are hearing. And here they are. Parthians and Medes, Elamites, and those who inhabit Mesopotamia. Now let's get some more inhabitants here, because all the rest of these are, for a while, are in accusative, right? So you repeat those inhabiting. Okay, I lost my place here. Oh, yeah. Now, the next word is actually a great puzzle, and the commentaries all mention it. It's Judea. Right. So wait a minute. This is a list of faraway places. What's Judea doing in there, right? And you can see that there's a little bit of evidence from the manuscript tradition. If you drop down to verse 9, the Tertullian thinks it should read, for no particular reason, Armenia, as well as apparently some of Augustine's testimony, and Eusebius, and apparently Jerome in some sense, think it should read Syria. But you get it's a geographical problem, right? What is Judea doing in there? Judea is where they're located now, right? So F.F. Bruce, you know, the great conservative commentator of a generation ago, he simply says, certainly the text is corrupt. Because nobody can make, why would it say Judea? So commentators routinely suppose, well, somehow this word got put in there and it's not supposed to be there. See? The list itself is messy, and although I don't know a lot about it, people have tried to organize it. Is there a geographical movement? Is there some sort of theological agenda, you know, for constructing the list the way it is? And I've never read anything convincing, and I certainly don't have a convincing proposition. So whether the text is corrupt or not, what it says is Judea, right? And the te is postpositive, so both Judea and Cappadocia. You'd think it would be someplace in Asia Minor, right? That's where Cappadocia is, right?
Just
Yeah, well, I don't think I want to hear it. So,
yeah.
Both Judea and Cappadocia, Pontus, and no, I don't know why the article is on Asia. I don't know. Not even Wallace, who has like 5,000 uses of the article. He didn't comment on this one. Both Phrygia and Pamphylia, these are all places in Asia Minor. Egypt and the regions of Libya. Now let's modify Libya. The, according to Cyrene, Libya. So that part, you know, that part of Libya, right? And now we'll get another nominative. So all that has been dwellers, right? The kat oikuntes from verse 9, right? So now we'll get another and this one is actually a little bit ambiguous. So is it those who are sojourning, comma, Romans? Or is it the Romans who are sojourning? The commentaries discuss, does this mean Jews who normally live in Rome, but they've come to Jerusalem for a while, so they can be called earlier kat oikuntes? Or is this Roman Jews who are sort of born there, but now they're living in, again, it's not a huge distinction in meaning. And you have Jews and proselytes, and they are Romans, so I suppose that's the main point. Then in verse 11, both Jews and proselytes, people from the island of Crete, Cretans, right? Cretans. You guys know the difference, right? Do you guys know, do you young persons know the term Cretan, C-R-E-T-I-N? It's like a doofus or an idiot. Yeah, you Cretan, yeah.
It's French.
Is it?
Cretan.
What? And what does it mean in Francais? Okay. I did not know this. That is not my dog. All right. Well, Cretans and Arabs, right? And all this is nominative. This is the largest subject in the history of the universe, right? I mean, grammatical subject. See? We here. Akuamen. Now we have the same thing we had earlier, where you can have, perhaps auton is the direct object. We hear them, because akuo can take a genitive personal object, right? We hear them while they are lalaoing, or we hear and then take it as a genitive absolute. Now, there's not a lot of difference in meaning, but it's just one of those things that grammarians would talk about. So we'll take it the first way. We hear them as they are speaking, again, in or by means of our languages. This is the possessive, this is the plural first person possessive pronoun. Hemateros, it means our, right? And it's an adjective. Did I say pronoun? If I did, I meant to say possessive adjective. And so it agrees in gender number case with the noun it's modifying. Which tongues? Our tongues. And now here's the accusative, the greatnesses of God. A megaleos is a surpassingness or a greatness. And as you know, it's often translated the mighty deeds of God. Which means probably that as these onlookers hear, you know, the people speaking in various languages, you know, French, German, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, Celtic, whatever, they're actually hearing content. You know, they're actually declaring what God has done, right? And not just, I was at this songwriters conference that the Synod sponsored a few years ago, which was a very good event. It brought all these Missouri Synod contemporary songwriters together. And it was an attempt to do some teaching, both theologically and musically, and to invite them to write Lutheran contemporary songs about baptism and the Lord's Supper, because as you can imagine, in evangelical circles, you don't get much of that, right? So one guy who was a veteran songwriter, he actually said at one point, you know, sometimes I imagine the Lord sitting at the Father's right hand and saying about our music, "All right, already, I know you love me. Can we talk about something else now?" Yeah, anyway, we don't have the specifics, but they are speaking the mighty things, the mightinesses, the mighty deeds of God. So it's a long sentence, but it's grammatically, it's just a bunch of place names mostly. Questions, comments on what, 8 through 11?
Maybe the reason you die on this there is because that one unlucky apostle had to speak Aramaic.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is a puzzle as to why that one place, it really does seem, I didn't even notice it, I'm just reading along, but then I don't own that many commentaries on Acts. I have two from, I have Alford and I have Expositors, both of those are older British works, and then I have Bruce, who's also a Brit, and I think I have Lenski, and they all mention this as a kind of an odd sort of stick out like a sore thumb place name. So, yeah. So anyway. Good. Anything else? All right. See, we're going to set a new, I'm excited about this text because we're going to set a new record for number of verses covered in Greek Club. So.
All we had to do was just tell you all a bunch of
places. Exactly. A bunch of place names. That's right. So.
And that's not exactly what he's doing, though. You know, you can overthink this.
Well, yeah. I do think that,
just like he's just rattling off a bunch of places.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not putting them in any order.
Yeah, that's what seems to be the case. Yeah. Right.
And I like the, Alice's Restaurant. That wasn't that. It was another one.
Uh-huh.
The guy actually said they asked him, went to the Chevy, but he had died.
Oh, American Pie.
American Pie.
Oh, yeah.
And he asked him,
what does it
mean? By that, it's just nothing.
Yeah, right. Okay. But Dan, we scholars have to have learned articles to write. We have to write about something. That's right. So
nothing.
I just gave a bunch of names. That's right.
Rhymes.
That's right. All right. Good. Verse 12. Existanta de pantes kai de parun alas pras alan legantes te thele tuta enai. So we've seen this form before. It's the same verb as at the beginning of verse 7. They kept on, were astonished, intransitively, all, right, pontes, and the diaporeod, they were puzzled. This is actually another imperfect, so the temporal augment is there in the eta, and then the un at the end is explicable, because of the vowel contraction of an epsilon contract verb. So e plus a is u. So it's actually just an imperfect indicative active from diaporeo, which is kind of a synonym of aporeo, which means to be confused or puzzled or something like that. Other to another, one to another, we would say, saying. Now this last part is interesting. It took me a while to figure this out, and it has to do with the meaning of thello. In a question like this, thello can mean to purpose or aim at something, not just to wish or want, okay? Literally, and tuta is probably the subject, and it's kind of an impersonal, it's a little bit of an idiom, apparently. So we might translate literally, what does this purpose to be? And you see, that's not too far from what does this wish to be? But it's kind of an idiom, and the lexicon just gives it, and it took me a while to ferret out all that abbreviated information in there. It means, what does this mean? That's what it means. Will?
In both French and Spanish, they have that construction where they put the verb to want and the verb to say.
Oh.
Together to mean, what does it mean?
Oh, really? In both French? Okay, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So. The other funny thing about this is, and I stumbled on this because of reading these older British commentators, they actually read an optative here. And it was, not that it matters, but there's nothing in the textual apparatus. And it's a reminder that the apparatus down here is just a summary, and it doesn't give all of the, and if it is an optative, then it is a, it's kind of like a less vivid condition. What might this mean? or something like that.
What was the difference between a statement and a question?
Well, it's a question either way because of te. Okay. But it would be the difference between what does this mean and what might this mean. So it's a little more tentative is all. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and then let's get let's get 13 quickly and then we'll stop. Heteroide diakleuadzantes elegan hati glukos memestomenoi azen. But others, less piously, diakleuadzo means to scoff, right? So as they scoffed, or maybe just scoffed and were saying elegan, the hati probably here is quotation marks, although it could be taken as indirect discourse, I suppose. Mestao is the verb of that perfect participle passive, and it means to fill. Why Luke didn't use a normal familiar verb for fill, I don't know. But it's periphrastic here with the linking verb. So they are in a having been filled condition. Okay. And glukos is from glukos, which is the third declension noun, means sweet wine. This is the genitive singular, neuter singular genitive. So they have been and are filled, literally, of sweet wine. Or, as we would say in English, they are filled with wine. So they're drunk. Yeah, well, it was interesting. Right. Right. They've been drinking Lone Star beer.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So, yeah. And then, of course, Peter stands and offers another alternative. So, okay, that was a little fast. Questions on 12 or 13? Yeah, Will, go ahead.
Question I had was, let's see, that first verb for to be amazed.
Yes. I think it's imperfect, actually.
Really?
Anytime you see the iota of histemi, I think that means that it's still a present stem form.
Okay. I thought the imperfect verb forms of the third person plural was on top of the omicron. Is that right?
Not with the me verbs.
Not with the me verbs.
Yeah, the me verbs are, in a word, evil.
Okay.
They are kakas. They are ra. Yeah, no, I the only well, and I could be wrong, but I think if you see that iota, it's still in the stem anywhere, it means it's a first principle part form. That's what it means. Yeah. And but there's no augment, see?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So it's only a secondary ending, that's all you've got to go with.
Right.
Yeah. No, you remember tithemi goes, this third singular is tithezin. Titheze. And the third plural is Tithe'aze. And where does this come from? And the answer is apa sheol. That's where it comes from. So, right. No, yeah. Now, I could be wrong, and now that you've asked, I will be sure and look it up, and I will broadcast my apologies next week on Greek Club. So, thank you very much.